Hello and welcome back to the Defense Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Civilian Sydney, and we are back for a third season. We'll get into that in a moment, but first, for all of you that are new here, welcome and thank you for checking out the show. On this podcast, our goal is to explore the innovations that are happening behind the scenes in the defense tech industry by talking to the real experts. That being said, I am not an expert. As the name implies, I'm a civilian with little government or technical experience, and it is my goal to learn as much as I can about the successes and challenges facing the industry, and then sharing it with you all, because if I can understand it, anyone can understand it. So we are kicking off the third season of the podcast, where I'll be connecting with the 8 hubs of the Microelectronics Commons program to learn more about the DoD critical technologies they are developing in the effort to re-onshore microelectronics manufacturing capabilities in the U.S. Microelectronics Commons was awarded to the 8 hubs in 2023 under the Chips and Science Act that was signed by President Biden in 2022. The Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Engineering is spearheading the effort, and they selected the SMARTS OTA, sponsored by NSWC Crane, as the contracting vehicle for the program. In our first episode of the season, I had the pleasure of sitting with Nicholas Ferenkopf, who is the Technical Director for the NordTech Hub. NordTech is based in New York and currently has close to 200 member organizations. Nick earned his BS in physics and PhD in nanoscale engineering from the University of Albany. After graduation, Nick began working at what is now New York Creates as a process integration engineer. Later, he became an engineering manager for the American Institute for Manufacturing Integrated Photonics, or AIM Photonics. Recently, Nick took on the role of technical director for NordTech. And that brings us to our episode. I hope you enjoy and stay tuned next week for another exciting Hub Spotlight. Well, hi, Nick. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining today. I'm looking forward to talking about NordTech and all your guys' capabilities and learning more.
Thanks for having us.
All right. So would you be able to start out by telling us a little bit about yourself and your experience in the defense tech industry?
Sure. So I earned my bachelor's in physics and PhD in nanoscale engineering from the University of Albany. My dissertation was on detecting DNA with different types of transistor-based sensors. After I graduated, I became a semiconductor process integration engineer at New York Creates, which is the New York Center for Research, Economic Advancement, Technology, Engineering, and Science. It's really focused on all those areas. And when I was an engineer there, I worked on things like silicon photonics, magnetics, 3D integration, and 65 nanometer. It was funded through MIT under DARPA's E5 program. So that was kind of my first exposure to doing research and development for the government. I then became an engineering manager for the American Institute for Manufacturing Integrated Photonics, or AIM Photonics. And while I was there, I oversaw the multi-project wafer services, and I worked on a range of different DoD-funded research projects from across the DoD. So Navy, Army, Air Force, even outside the DoD across the government. And then most recently, I've been the technical director for NordTech, where I'm excited to leverage that expertise that I've gained in order to support the DoD needs and help build a strong American microelectronics ecosystem.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks for sharing. So as you just said, you're the technical director for NordTech. So this is one of the 8 hubs that was awarded under Microelectronics Commons in 2023. Would you be able to tell us about your hub and how it came to be?
Certainly. So our hub is led and was kind of conceived and organized by 5 founding members. So New York Creates, like I mentioned before, Cornell University, IBM, RPI, and the University at Albany. And I think it's important to understand that these different institutions have been working together, either in official collaborations or informal partnerships, for many years. And so it was easy to kind of step forward and make this hub together. And one of the key missions that we're trying to do is to continue to do those collaborations across industry, academia, and the nonprofit space, but also to expand our network. So including more folks in our network to get them involved in non-traditional defense contracting is really important to us, on top of things like workforce development and actually creating some of the technical prototypes that we're interested in.
Okay, great. So how would you summarize your hub's main mission?
So our mission, like most of ME Commons, is to successfully facilitate technology transitions from lab to fab. We have this scalable infrastructure. We have multi-pronged workforce development initiatives to kind of address those needs. And we're trying to expand our collaborations with other Department of Defense initiatives, and as well as other federal programs and even state-based programs. For example, the DoD selected some R&D programs that informed the development of the NORTEC network, and other types of R&D programs could leverage what we do here in the hub, both across the Northeast region and across the country. So again, our participants are from academia, government, industry, both the defense industrial base and then small, medium enterprises. So some participants contribute these facilities, some people use the facilities, some folks are most interested in workforce development, and we just try to kind of make those connections and help all the different threads thrive.
Yeah, great. Thanks for explaining. So you kind of touched on this a little bit, but what are your hub's tech areas, and what do you think your hub specifically brings to the table for these critical areas?
So our hub chose to focus on four technical areas, and those would be AI hardware, quantum, secure edge, and commercial leap ahead. And that's based on the expertise that we felt that our region had already established in those regions. So in the AI hardware space, for example, at Near Creates, we're home to IBM Research's AI Hardware Center. And that clean room and lab facilities there have been the center of significant semiconductor breakthroughs for decades. Really, if you look in any smartphone, tablet, or laptop that we're using today, the technology that enables those microchips to work was probably invented or perfected at the IBM Research Center at New York Create. So things like channel SiGe, high-k metal gate, SOI, copper interconnects, these things are common today, but at one point were new lab-based things that we were able to mature here in the Northeast. And so one of the ways that we're trying to kind of democratize access and make it available to others across the ME Commons is to have these test vehicles where we can take materials development from university fabs, test them out on small wafers, and then eventually transition them into our industrially relevant 300 millimeter clean room. Similarly, for quantum technologies, our hub's really a powerhouse when it comes to fabricating the different types of quantum hardware. For example, in our 300 millimeter clean room here in Albany, we can make superconducting chips, we can make quantum photonic chips, we can make trapped matter quantum chips. And then all this research translates into products. So at our hub partner RPI, they've installed a IBM quantum computer that was, there was a ribbon cutting back in April for that. And it's, you know, up and running. The RPI researchers and even students, there's a student club where they get to use a real life industrial grade quantum computer. And so that was probably the biggest area we invested in capital equipment. So trying to increase the ability for folks to try out new materials, new processes at the academic sites before we try to roll them into more high volume. And I just want to pause there because I think it's important to note that those two ME Commons technical areas are, to me, really exciting to be working on. The 2022 Nobel Prize in Physics was for quantum photonic entanglement. And this year's Physics Prize this week was just announced is around things like neural networks, large language models that power AI hardware. So the potential impact here is huge, and we've really just scratched the surface. And then going on secure edge computing, which is like the Internet of Things, you know, overlaps a lot with AI hardware. So we want to put that processing out at the edge so it's more useful. You don't always have access to the cloud. And we have a lot of experience in designing secure architectures between IBM and then NYU. They actually have a cybersecurity awareness week coming up where we're sponsoring a hackathon where students will use AI to try to insert vulnerabilities in the chip designs and be able to learn and find careers in those areas as well. And then lastly, again, these are only four of the six technical areas, but commercial leap ahead, it's a little bit of a miscellaneous or grab bag category of different technologies that would be, you know, really a game changer for both DoD and dual use applications. Things like power electronics, compound semiconductor, integrated photonics, like I mentioned before, magnetics. All those things are active R&D areas across different members of our hub. So that's our hub in a nutshell, and the reason we chose those technical areas. And if you look at a map of our membership, it's concentrated in the Northeast, but we have people who are interested from coast to coast that kind of want to tap into that expertise, which has been really exciting.
Awesome. Yeah, well, congratulations. It sounds really exciting. A good time for you guys to be getting involved in these technical areas. And speaking of that, I'd love to hear about the projects that Nordtech was awarded recently in the first round of project awards under Microelectronics Commons. So would you mind giving me kind of a brief summary of your projects and what you'll be working on?
Certainly. So in the first round of projects for ME Commons, we were awarded four. The first one is Nitride RF Next Generation Technology, which has the fun acronym of Nitrider. It's led by Cornell University, and the goal there is to unlock the full potential of things like gallium nitride transistors for high-speed communication and radar systems, which are super important to the DoD, but also important outside there, and trying to extract the last little bit of RF output power. The other three projects that we got were all quantum-based. So the first was led by New York Creates. It's the improved materials for superconducting qubits with scalable fabrication, which again is trying to build this pipeline between materials development at some of our academic facilities like NYU, like Cornell, and then transferring that learning and that knowledge into a 300 millimeter platform that has been developed over the past few years. And then eventually turn that into a multi-project wafer offering so that we can make it available to lots of different researchers. The next quantum-based project was Quantum Ultra Broadband Photonic Integrated Circuits and Systems, or QPICS. This is led by AIM Photonics and jointly with Cornell University. That group is trying to develop a quantum photonic technology that spans from the ultraviolet wavelengths all the way to the infrared, which allows enabling advances in both quantum sensing, networking, and computation. It builds on some work that has been happening for the past 4 years, or maybe even 6 years now, of trying to tweak integrated photonics for quantum applications. There's been some really good achievements so far, and this again expands the functionality of that platform and hopefully can make it available to more folks as well. And then lastly is heterogeneous quantum networking. This project's led by Rochester Institute of Technology. And in this project, it kind of builds on some of those other different quantum projects where we want to figure out a way to get different quantum computers to talk to each other. And that's been something that's people have been working on for a while. And what this specific project is trying to do is to figure out how to get different types of quantum computers to talk to each other. So how do you get a superconducting quantum computer to talk to a trapped ion or a quantum photonic computer or things like that? So that's going to be really exciting to see how we can use some of the hardware that we develop in our hub for that type of networking application, because different types of quantum computers are more or less useful for different applications. And so you might not want to put all your eggs in one basket, but have access to all of them and be able to have them work together.
Great. Well, thank you for explaining. Congratulations again. Excited to see where those projects go. So this series is kind of a deep dive into those six critical DoD technical areas that Microelectronics Commons is focused on. And as you said, you guys have four of those critical areas. So I was hoping we could kind of deep dive into a couple of those. So would you be able to dive a little further into AI and the utilization of AI in this context of semiconductors and microchips?
Sure. So one of the critical areas that the Nordtech Hub is addressing within the AI technical area is the need for a secure and resilient microelectronics that can support the DoD's evolving mission requirements. So future AI-enabled systems are going to depend on the advanced microelectronics for things like autonomous systems and decision-making tools, as well as secure communications. And this, again, is where AI hardware and secure edge can overlap, because even today, if you have Alexa or Google or ChatGPT, all those things rely on data centers that use a lot of energy and are networked. You have to be able to communicate with them. You can imagine that in the battlefield, you're not always going to have the ability to connect to the internet and ask the AI model for information. Yeah. You got to figure out a way to do that at the edge. And so that's one of the challenges, is figuring out ways that we can do some of that AI computation, that AI, say, identification of targets out in the field. And then also want to make sure that we can do those things securely. If you put an AI system on every drone and one of those things crashes, you don't want to make that technology available to adversaries. You don't want to make that technology vulnerable to infection, so that you might be disrupting the proper decision-making of those tools. So our network is trying to create more efficient and scalable production methods. We think that those types of research projects are going to be vital to onshoring U.S. microelectronics manufacturing. We want to make sure that we're able to regain leadership in producing those cutting edge chips domestically. In places like NVIDIA and AMD, those places are really driving in the commercial space, and we want to make sure that we have the ability to make similar products for national security requirements here in the United States.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for explaining. So the next one I'd like to dive a little further into is quantum. And I know you said you have three projects in that technical area. So I'm curious to hear more about how that technical area kind of relates to this issue that we're looking to solve.
Sure. So again, quantum is another one of those areas that we're very interested in. Quantum is a big field, a big term. It can mean a lot of different things. Actually, I just got off a virtual keynote from a quantum summit that's happening down in New York City. And coincidentally, it was not the only quantum summit in New York City this week. There was another different quantum summit earlier. So lots of different people that are doing work on quantum for different applications. So the one today was about quantum sensing. So how can you help the folks in the field be able to, say, navigate or detect things? We can make much better sensors, like inertial navigation sensors using quantum technologies. This is super important because things like GPS that we take for granted is easy for adversaries to disrupt. And so if you don't know where in the world you are or where your allies are, it makes things a lot more difficult. And it's even something that we're seeing in the commercial space, that folks that are flying commercial airliners can potentially lose GPS connections, and that makes folks very nervous as well. So quantum sensing is one, quantum computing is another. So being able to solve these technical problems that even the best supercomputers that we have available today couldn't crack in, you know, thousands of years, the quantum computer has a completely different architecture that would allow us to solve those problems more quickly. And we can also apply it to non-DoD applications. You can apply it to drug discovery, as one example, with that new type of computing. And so those are the types of things that, again, researchers at RPI are able to use on the existing quantum supercomputer. And then some of our research efforts and research efforts of others are trying to advance the state of those quantum computers to be able to do, you know, more advanced work. So we believe that by leveraging some of the cutting edge research that we're doing in quantum sensing, quantum encryption, quantum computing, our partners are able to create the technologies that can provide the DoD with, you know, unprecedented data security, communication speeds, and computational powers. Like I talked about with the AI initiatives, these technology efforts will help us onshore the microelectronics. We want to be the leader in the world that's developing these things, that we make sure that we have a little bit more control and confidence that we have access to these technologies and not necessarily our adversaries. You hear a lot in the DoD of this asymmetrical advantage, and we achieve that through technical supremacy. And this is one area where I think we're definitely on the cusp of being world leaders in it, and we want to make sure that we preserve that position.
Yeah, great. So I have maybe a silly question. So with GPS being vulnerable, is quantum sensing something that can kind of make that technology more robust on the front end, or is it something that can kind of swoop in and help it when GPS gets, I guess, like taken over, or like if there's a vulnerability in it?
No, it's a good question. The idea would be a quantum-based inertial sensor, or potentially magnetic sensor, allows the chip to understand where it is in the world without relying on any external satellites. So jamming all of a sudden becomes a non-issue. So it's a completely different technology that would be available if we're, again, able to figure out how to make it work. And I think we've gotten to the point where we can make it work, and it's in that valley of death that ME Commons is really interested in. All right, how do we get it into production and get it into the field and put it into the warfighter's hands? So I think quantum sensing for those types of navigation applications is one of the more advanced technical applications of quantum, and probably one of the ones we may or may not see in the field, because, you know, we might not talk about it if it does go out in the field. Maybe it's already there. I don't know.
So, do you see it being something that could eventually like completely replace GPS technologies or kind of partner with it to make it better?
Ooh, I try not to make predictions because I'm usually wrong,
Yeah,
but
that's fair.
I could easily see how it replaces it, right? So I think
Okay.
in the initial years of adaptation, again, we might not know that it's being used by the DoD in sensitive applications, and then just like regular GPS, as time goes on, it becomes available into the commercial sector, but maybe it's expensive, so maybe you only use it on large commercial airliners or something like that. But nowadays, right, every phone has GPS built in it, so I don't know, give it 30, 40 years, and then maybe we'll have one of those in our pockets too.
Well, that's fascinating. Cool. So I'd like to kind of switch gears a little bit and touch on the aspect of workforce development within Microelectronics Commons. So, in your opinion, why do you think the Commons program has made this aspect kind of such a large part of its efforts? Why do you think workforce development is so important right now?
Well, I mean, Microelectronics Commons recognizes that a high-tech workforce is really the foundation of advancing and preserving our semiconductor industry in the U.S. So, outside of ME Commons, other parts of the CHIP Act are investing large amounts of money to encourage the commercial sector to build manufacturing facilities here in the United States. But you need people to work there. So here in New York, we have ON Semiconductor, we have Wolfspeed, we have GlobalFoundries, we have a bunch of large semiconductor fabs, but we're also going to be having even more as Micron has announced that they want to build a super fab in upstate New York. So where are you going to find the potential tens of thousands of people that are going to staff all these things? Well, you got to do workforce development, and that's going to take time, so you have to start doing it now. So we want to make sure that we're creating the workforce of tomorrow that's familiar with advanced microelectronics topics like quantum computing, like AI hardware. I know even when I was in college, we were always told that the mission of college is to train the students for careers that don't exist yet. And so we're trying to train folks for microelectronics technologies that don't exist yet. So some of the things that we're trying to do within Nortech. Oh, the third part I forgot to mention, besides having folks that can make the microchips, besides the folks that can work with the microchips, you're also interested in making sure that you have the right workforce within the DoD and working with the veteran population and the even the active duty or the civilian population. So one of the unique programs that we have is a project called VetStep. It's the Veteran Semiconductor Training and Experience Program, where we take folks that are in the process of transitioning out of the military and are looking for ways to apply their skills elsewhere. And so you have folks that have spent years, if not decades, working on electronic systems for the military. Well, we can reskill them to work on electronics or semiconductor equipment in the commercial sector. And again, we need potentially tens of thousands of these folks, even in the Northeast. So that's one. We also have a Warrior Scholar project. And both of those are, again, trying to equip veterans with the skills needed for careers in the semiconductor industry. On top of that, internships, supporting students in grad school on these programs are kind of the core, and that's the standard way of doing workforce development. We want to do that as well. We also have two new unique initiatives that we're going to be launching this year. One is an AR/VR program that came out of Cornell. So not everybody has access to a clean room. So how do you get someone familiar with those types of things? VR is one of those new technologies where we can let people kind of walk around a clean room without ever leaving their home or their school. And then the other one is learning how to design the microchips. So it's really the whole ecosystem from coming up with an idea and designing the chip through manufacturing it, through fielding it. And we have, again, I mentioned before, the hackathon of helping students learn how to use technology to design chips. And we're going to have more opportunities for students to learn how to design a chip, lower the barrier of entry, get it out there between VR and these chip design things into lots of different community colleges, historically black colleges and universities, minority-serving institutions. These are all things that are easily scalable so that we can reach a large number of people at once. And so without that, without the people that know how to design the chips and make the chips and use the chips, then all the work that we're doing here would be for naught. So we want to make sure that we have all that.
Yeah, really cool that you're working so much with veterans and historically black colleges and stuff like that. I'm sure that, that's mutually beneficial. So that's cool. So is there anything else that you would like to highlight or talk about your hub today? That's all the questions that I have.
Yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned it, or I kind of beat around the bush a little bit, but one of the things that we like to say is, you know, one of our unofficial taglines is that no single company or organization can execute across the end-to-end value chain. So like I was saying, from design to fabrication to packaging to testing to fielding, there's no one institution that can do all that. And so that's the power that comes from these hubs. We've assembled the distributed expertise from folks that are designers, from folks that are manufacturing, and folks that are, you know, putting it in things that are useful. It gives us in the Northeast the onshore capability and scalability to do research, prototyping, and transitions to support the DoD and any commons. But we think we can also start to apply it to non-DoD problems as well. And that's going to be the exciting kind of phase two of ME Commons, is applying this hub model and this network that we've built to other applications. So collectively, our advances in chip design and IP and tooling make us kind of a strategic springboard for onshoring and scaling these microelectronics developments for DoD missions.
Yeah, really well said. So how can someone get connected with NORTEG if they're interested in becoming a member or getting involved?
So we are rolling out now our official membership agreement and bylaws. So folks should visit our website. They can check that out, join as a member. We don't have a membership fee right now. We're at over 160 or so institutions that have expressed interest in working with us. So we're definitely looking for ways to connect with folks. Again, it could span that whole semiconductor value chain. It could be in the workforce development space. You know, you could be looking for talented workers, or you could be looking to train talented workers. So by all means, the website's the best way. We have a membership application form. Our email address is posted there, and we have a pretty small team. So we'll try to make sure we don't lose anybody and find interesting ways to connect.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you so much for coming on and for sharing, explaining all that to me. Really appreciate it, and excited for your hub in this next, you know, few months and years.
Well, thank you for the opportunity today. Always nice to talk about the work that we're doing and planning to do here at NORTEG.